Hey, folks, and welcome to Typology, the show in which we explore the mystery of the human personality through the lens of the Enneagram. My name is Anthony Skinner, the producer of the show, and we are loaded for bear today, folks, and that means this is going to be a fantastic show. Yet again, we have another amazing guest on the show, talking about Holly Hayes, award-winning author, founder, and CEO of Project Sanctuary, which is this amazing survivor-run nonprofit social enterprise that employs and empowers women who've actually survived lives of trafficking, violence, and addiction in Austin, Texas. And good news is she's moving here to Nashville. People, your loss, Austin, our gain. Actually, Austin, you're one of my favorite cities. I always say if Austin and Nashville could marry, it would make the perfect city. But anyway, we are happy that Holly's going to be a new neighbor, and we are happy to have her on the show. That's it for me, Anthony Skinner. Let's get to the man of the hour, your host, Ian Cron.
Holly Hayes, welcome to Typology.
Thank you so much for having me. What an honor to be here.
Well, I've been looking forward to this podcast because your story is so fascinating and inspiring. And I want to jump in before we get to your life experience as a Enneagram 3 with a 4 wing, right? The performer. I just want to get a little backstory and hear about Sanctuary Project. Tell me all about it.
So I started Sanctuary Project in February of 2018. We are a nonprofit social enterprise, and we employ women coming out of trafficking, violence, and addiction. We have a jewelry line, so all our products are handmade by survivors, and just got picked up by Target.com, which is super exciting.
Whoa, that's amazing.
I know, as a three. Wow. Do you like how I dropped that in like the first 3 minutes of talking with you? I'm like, I've achieved this, and I do it all while being creative with a forming. Yeah.
Please don't waste any time name dropping. Please feel free. So this is very exciting. Tell us more. Like, how did Sanctuary Project get started?
So I'm a survivor myself. I came out of a life of trafficking, violence, and addiction 20 years ago. Mm. I grew up in an achieving home, really, where a performance-based home, and ended up sort of failing at that pretty early on, and fell into a life of drugs and alcohol pretty young, around the age of 14, and started drinking and using drugs every day by the time I was 15, and had dropped out of high school by the time I was 16. And was getting arrested all the time, ended up in abusive relationships. And at 19, I met my trafficker. And that relationship really wreaked havoc on my life. And I ended up getting drunk and high and not showing up for the jobs he was lining up for me. So I actually failed as a prostitute. As a three, you can imagine that failure. It's about the lowest you can go in society. And the drinking and drug use just came first for me, and ultimately didn't enjoy being trafficked. So I wasn't, so I just stopped showing up, and that man kicked me out, and I ended up homeless. And so at the age of 21, I was homeless and on the floor of a public bathroom and watching my tears hit the floor, and three words fell out of my mouth. I just said, "God, help me." And I'd never believed in God, had no experience with God, didn't grow up in a God home or God family, didn't know any God people, but it was all I could think to say. And then that night I ended up meeting someone who got me into a recovery program. And I've been sober since that day and safe since that day. And really then started on this journey of trying to rebuild my life and realized there are very little tools for rebuilding a life with that amount of trauma and that amount of criminal record and that amount of emotional distress, really trying to get sober, trying to get healthy and sane, and trying to untangle from this really violent and exploitive relationship. So over the years, as I rebuilt, I started to dream of building a place where others could rebuild too. I worked for this shoe shine very early in my recovery, a shoe shine stand very early in my recovery, where everyone was in recovery and we all shined shoes together. And I just remember that community being such a special part of those early days of my recovery journey. And so building Sanctuary Project was really out of a heart of creating that kind of environment where women are safe to cry at work. They're rebuilding their lives and their resumes at the same time. And we're all in community with each other, having experienced this similar life.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Wow. That is amazing.
Thank you.
As I mentioned to you earlier, Becca Stevens of Thistle Farms is a dear friend here in Nashville who does very similar work. And
she's incredible.
Yeah, she is a force of nature.
What is her Enneagram?
It's really hard to peg. And part of it, and this is on a podcast we did together, mm-hmm. and so I'm not telling stories out of school, but I think trauma has made it harder, and I think this is not unusual, for survivors to mm-hmm. figure out their type. It just becomes a little bit, it's not impossible. I'm just saying that trauma can make type a little bit more of a journey to peg. I know that you use the Enneagram with the women you're working with, the survivors. Yeah. Is that true in your experience?
Absolutely. I think because so much of our emotional world has been rocked that oftentimes we'll manifest as a four because we're so in touch with our emotions because we've been through so much and those emotions are just right there. And so I've seen girls mistype as four. I've seen girls mistype as five because they're so emotionally shut down from so much trauma when really they're probably more of a six or something, but they're typing as a five because it's so hard to access any feelings. I think the two shows up a fair amount. And I wonder if that's just like a self-preservation thing where it's like, okay, I'll just like take care of everyone around me. And so, I mean, the Enneagram's always linked to trauma, right? But I do think that sometimes that trauma masks what we are. When I was trying to type myself, I remember when I was first reading through all the descriptors, I thought I might be a four. I was thinking I was probably a four because I am so in touch with my emotions and I didn't relate at all to a three not having that in touch with their emotions. You know, like I don't have that disconnect that threes have. I'm quick to cry. I'm quick to connect. I'm quick to go deep. And so I actually thought I was a four, and it wasn't until I really dug in and started to understand where I go in stress and security that I was able to say, oh, okay, I definitely go to nine in stress and I definitely go to six in security and don't go to one and two ever. Right. And so that understanding those things actually helped me to type correctly as a three, but with a four wing. And I think so much of that wing even is about my trauma and just having had such a hard life. I can't not access those emotions or feel that sense of like that I am a unique being, right?
So this is fascinating, and you mentioned two things I want to highlight. One is you said that the Enneagram and trauma are always related somehow, right? Something to that effect. Is that
close true? I mean, you're the expert. I feel like that's how I understand it, but. Right. I mean, there's a trauma message that we've gotten at some point as a young person in our childhood or in our young life. There's a message that we've gotten. And, for me, that message was achieve. Right. That message was perform, achieve, be impressive, show the world your best face, curl your hair every day and show up looking your best and being your best and ace every test and you'll be okay in life. And, you know, and I think those childhood messages mix with the other childhood traumas to create that personality or that Enneagram type.
So this is, I mean, this is a really worthy topic of conversation, and we've had it before, which is some teachers will say that your Enneagram type is determined by your first experience of trauma.
That's interesting.
So it's not just, obviously there's genetics involved and, you know, all that stuff, but you know, if you think about it, if you receive a traumatic message or experience of betrayal, let's say, and in addition to that, you grew up in a home where nobody's in charge and where, you know, you've perhaps even been the victim of abuse, would not be surprising if you became an Enneagram 8, you know,
right.
A person who's like, I will not be betrayed again. I will not be controlled by other people again. And so, I mean, yeah, I definitely agree that there is some relationship between the formation of the human personality and trauma. And we all have trauma, all of us, right?
Absolutely.
The other thing I wonder if you were going to mention was backing into your number, because she mentioned identifying, mm-hmm. finding her strength and or where she goes in health and where she goes in stress. And that helped mm-hmm. her identify.
And stress and security.
Yeah, stress and security. You've talked about that before.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's lots of ways that we can, when you're not sure of your type, that you can kind of dig down next. And one would be to investigate stress and security points. So, like, does that sound like me? Obviously, when you're uncertain, to look at the subtypes. Mm-hmm. Did you know what your subtype is?
So I think if I'm a three, I'm a social three, okay. but that almost messed me up, because when I look at the subtypes, I also identify as, or the 1-to-1 4, mm-hmm. Because that four will achieve sometimes to mask pain. And so looking at the subtypes almost messed me up, because it's like, well, when I look at the subtypes, then I'm like, well, maybe I am that like 1-to-1 4 who's achieving to mask pain. Mm-hmm. But ultimately I think that core message that I got as a child is what I keep coming back to. That core message I got as a child mm-hmm. was, you need to achieve in this world or you won't be okay.
And yet, now I'm in recovery, right? So I,
you know, are?
Oh yeah. And I'm still involved. Okay. I'm still drug and alcohol.
Were you a big old drunk like me?
Yes. And a drug addict.
Okay. Oh, yay.
Yay.
Exciting.
I mean, yay for pharmaceuticals. Boy, we love them pharmaceuticals.
You totally messed up your life too.
Oh, yes. Did you go to treatment or just into a 12-step program?
12-step program, which I'm still active in today.
So am I.
Okay. Well, I'm excited that we might get to connect in Nashville at some point there.
I can turn you, the recovery community in Nashville is incredible.
I've heard wonderful things. Anywhere there's like good partying, I feel like there's good recovery.
Oh yeah.
And Nashville's a good party city. So I imagine it's going to have like good recovery, right?
And you meet a lot of famous people in meetings, which makes it fun.
It does make it fun.
Why not?
That does make it fun. And then you're like, oh, I can't tell anybody. This is so cool that I just saw blankety blank.
I know. It was like going to meetings in LA. It's the same thing. All right. That's for you and I to talk about. Everyone is now like, checking their email while we're talking about recovery. But it does tie into what we're talking about, which is you grew up, the message that threes hear is I have to achieve. I have to look like an achiever.
Impress.
I have mm-hmm. to impress others, and I have to avoid failure at all costs. You did not avoid failure at all costs.
No,
I mean, the only thing I could say is to you would be, I guess you were striving to be the best alcoholic drug addict
in
the city.
I kind of was. I mean, I remember like when I started drinking and using, I was like, wow, I'm really good at this. Like, this is something I could drink all my guy friends under the table. And it was something I actually got accolades for. People were like, wow, you are the party girl. You are the best at this. And, I was desperate to escape, because I had been sexually abused in my childhood. Mm. So I had all this like unresolved trauma. So I was desperate to escape. And then I found out I was like really good at drinking and using drugs. And then I was simultaneously, so like, I tell my story a lot and I talk about everything that happened and how badly I failed at life, but I was simultaneously really achieving as a performer. So I was at a top musical theater conservatory when all this was going on. So despite the fact that I was like completely ruining my life with drugs and alcohol, in horrific abusive relationships, failing as a prostitute, I was still achieving on stage. I was getting leads. I was winning awards. I was winning roles. I was getting accolades, and people would look at my life and my talent and say, wow, you're incredible. You're going to be something. And so I was able to both achieve at using and drinking and impress people there, impress people with how well I could party, impress them with how long I could stay up. And then I was able to hide behind how impressive I was on stage as a performer. And so it was this perfect storm of like, how is this going to break? Because if I can keep going and I can keep achieving, and I think we see this like in Hollywood a lot, if I can keep achieving and keep performing and keep impressing people here, then no one's going to notice that my life is in shambles over here. And so if I had not, really hit an internal bottom where I just was so sick and tired of being sick and tired, I think I would have gone on forever. living that, you know, double life of I'm, you know, totally failing as a prostitute and, you know, and epically failing at being a normal adult, but achieving over here in this performance sphere.
Mm. And, you know, just for our listeners, I just want to make something clear to them. You know, there's a lot of misconceptions and stigma around addictions, right? And not just drug and alcohol addiction, but, you know, obviously pornography addictions, process addictions, that's what those are. Gambling is another process addiction, et cetera. What people, you know, this is happening less and less, but they sort of see it as a moral failure. And I
right.
actually think it's to the point that even from my own experience, I felt like it was a moral failure, even after I was told it wasn't a moral failure, yeah, right? That it was a disease.
Yep.
But here's the deal. All addictions begin with pain and they end in pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just always am trying to communicate to people that addictions are about pain management. If you and trauma management, and these are just now medical facts now that we're realizing. And so, you know, the pain of sexual abuse is so great. The betrayal is so tremendous that, you know, everybody finds a treatment plan for their pain. Everybody, you know, and you could argue, by the way, that every Enneagram type's strategy is a pain management system.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
A one just I'll make everything perfect so that I don't have, so that I never experience pain. I'll pour into others so I never experience pain. I'll achieve so I never experience pain. Yeah.
Okay. The big issue for threes, the passion, which is the source of all of our suffering. And it is the emotional motivation that drives this pattern of, for the three, deceit, mask wearing, the ability to constantly be swapping out masks to win the approval and to meet the expectations of the crowd, all this stuff. And the danger is, of course, and the result is threes don't even, after a point, know who they are. They don't even know if they have an authentic self because they've so over-identified with all these other false masks, these false selves that they've been putting on. Have you discovered your authentic self?
I'm constantly rediscovering my authentic self. Have I this week? Yes.
Okay.
I think what's been really interesting for me has been this journey of, so I came to Christ like after I'd been in recovery several years. And what was interesting for me was like, I think I went through a phase of putting on Christ, like another mask, right?
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Well, we're coming back to that.
Yeah. Wow. Right. But like achieving at Christendom, like I'm going to achieve at theology. I'm going to achieve at performance-based faith. I'm going to achieve at being the perfect evangelical model of I once was lost, but now I'm found, was blind, but now I see.
Yes.
You know, and I think it, I think I put that on to such a degree that I lost myself even in Christ.
You became addicted. It sounds like you became addicted to religion, which is a topic I often talk about. You know, it's like people think that they're in a relationship with God. It's actually this weird codependent kind of addicted relationship. And it's not real. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I wouldn't say it was that, like, because I do think like there was a genuine healing that happened in my soul. And so me one-on-one with Christ, there was something very real happening and is still something that very real that happens. But the religion aspect of it, I just wanted to do it perfectly and impress people with it, you know, and impress people with how far I'd come. And like, I mean, my favorite thing to hear was like, oh, wow, I can't believe you had the life you had because look at you today. And that's, you know, that's like this, oh, wow, what an extreme from darkness into light. And she was a failed prostitute and now she helps people. And,
this
you know,
is
I wanted
so great.
To win at Christianity.
Okay. But remember Lisa Welchel?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you've never heard my interview with Lisa Welchel, who was star of
Facts of Life,
right.
For 8 seasons. And she's a three. And she just, you just basically described her whole experience of like, you know, in her faith experience, she wanted to be the very best, like the icon of you know, the Christian woman and mother and all this stuff. And that became a mask. And of course, this is part of the deceit problem. you know, which is, well, it looks good and seems to be helping people when I talk about it. And I'm getting a lot of strokes for being that person and a lot of applause for being that person, even though that is not the totality of who I am. And there's actually someone behind this, an authentic self that is separate from that person, if that makes sense, you know? And so the danger, like, let me give you an example of this. And I've seen in a 12-step group, we had a guy come in, he was a pastor. I think I've told this story before, and he was a three, he was a mega church pastor, and he had a colossal fall. I mean, like a DWI.
As they do.
I'm talking about a DWI in the middle of the city. You know what I mean? Like it was big.
And then everything. I like this guy.
I mean, don't you? I actually like him. But he came out of treatment, came back to into this 12-step group that I'm in, and he was there for about 2 weeks before the group started to realize that everyone was starting to kind of think this guy was the best recovering alcoholic any of us had ever met.
He was winning.
He'd only been there for 2 weeks. I mean, he was almost chairing the meeting after 2 weeks, you know? And every time he shared,
he had all the slogans down and he'd done the steps already.
Oh my gosh, he was running.
I
mean, a month into it, you know, he's like got three sponsees. He's not supposed to have three sponsees until he's had a year sober. You know what I mean? And finally, his God bless his sponsor, because his sponsor was smart enough to say, you know what, so-and-so, you're full of crap. This is you are full of it. Mm-hmm. This is a new mask, and now it's a new game. And you have it's like, what are you going to do? Write a bestseller now about getting sober?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like parlay this thing into a new success story, and maybe make a little money, and you know, get on a speaker circuit, and do this and that. And it's like he said, for the next 6 months, you cannot talk in a meeting.
Wow.
All you can do is listen. And every time you feel that mask starting to come up and you start to get that, not drunk feeling, but that high from winning the crowd over, every time you feel that coming up, just call yourself on it, you know?
It's so good.
Mm.
Holly, you mentioned wearing these multiple masks. You wore a mask as a prostitute. You wore a mask on the stage. And then you came into the church and you put on the face of Christ as a mask. I'm just wondering, what's your strategy now to help undo that reflexive impulse to put a mask on? How do you handle that now?
Well, it's incredible. So, you know, as Ian was talking about that and this guy's sponsor in the recovery program is the place that I'm myself. I mean, and that's the place I feel like I actually bring my authentic self, where I actually am sharing who I really am, what's really going on with me. I have accountability there, friends there, a community there where I am, where nobody gives a shit if I have a, sorry if I'm not allowed to say shit.
Oh, you can say shit.
Nobody gives a care. Okay. Nobody gives a shit if I have some big Christian ministry. Nobody cares what I'm doing. Nobody cares how many people I'm helping in, you know, with Sanctuary Project. It's a place where it's like, where I am fully reminded who I am without God in my life. And I am fully reminded of the miracle he has done, not just in my life, but in our lives. And I think it's so humbling because, you know, I tell my story and people are like, whoa, cool. God rescued you off the floor of a bathroom. That's amazing. How impressive. And then I go to a meeting and I hear my story six times in a row.
That's right.
And
that's
like,
right.
I am not impressive. Like, we have an impressive
that's
God.
Awesome. Yeah.
But I am not impressive. And so that's the place where I feel like I'm able to just take the mask off and be myself. And then in my marriage too, I mean, I married a nine, which was the best thing a three can do. If you're a three, marry a nine. Because this man, like, just, he expects nothing of me. He expects nothing of me. He is not impressed by anything I do. He is totally, I mean, I don't like he found out recently that we launched like nine product launches this spring. And he was like, oh, I didn't know you did that. Like, not impressed, you know, no, right. like could not care less. And it's so good for me because it's like, it just reminds me what's important. What's important is our daughter. What's important is our land and, you know, the way it feels when we get to care for it. What's important is our marriage and the way we nurture it when we're alone together. What's important is that time when we snuggle up and watch HGTV before bedtime and turn off everything. You know, I think that those safe places with those people who couldn't care less what I'm doing and who couldn't care less about some impressive story of what God has done, even those are the places that I feel like I can take off the mask and be my authentic self. Mm. And that authentic self is, you know, I like to call it like the you-iest you. It's like, it's, that
the
authentic
you-iest
self is,
you.
That authentic self is so close to like the goofy girl I was when I was a kid. The girly girl who just wanted to like wear bows and pink and fluffy things and even the silly girl I was when I was drunk. I think a lot of like the masks came off when I was drunk. And I think that's why I liked it, because all of a sudden I didn't feel like I had to keep it all together. And I could be this goof and I could be like rapping with my guy friends. Literally, I was like, I would like flow like a rapper. Don't ask me to do it now. I need booze. But that me that was like, that couldn't care less what anyone thinks, I actually got to be her drunk. And I think that a three craves that. I think we crave a love that doesn't expect us to perform, and a sense of well-being in ourselves where we can set aside everything and, you know, like forget it all and just be me. And so part of that was like that attraction to alcohol was, it was that I get to take off every mask and be free.
And of course that is sort of the story of every type, right? That, beneath the adaptive stratagems of our personalities, there is this essence, this essential self.
Yeah.
And every type feels at some level like I could not be my authentic self, and I needed to find a pattern or a way of being in the world as a little person to protect that little self. And so I became a two, or I became a four, or I became a six. And you know, this all helped protect that essential self. And the journey toward health is being able to relax our grip on those, on that personality pattern, so that the essential self feels safe to emerge again. Right.
Mm.
And so that's good. What you're describing. It doesn't mean that you're going to be any less of an achiever. It doesn't mean I'm not going to be any less of a creative as a four, you know, or doing what I do. Or it doesn't mean, you know, your personality is going to get deleted.
Right.
It just means that the unhelpful, unskillful, self-defeating patterns of your type that helped you as a little person to hide the essential self, to keep it safe, they no longer work. And your essential self is saying, I want to come out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to come out. And I think also, by the way, addictions are also another way of saying, when your essential self is saying, I want to come out, it can create a lot of pain. And especially if there's a lot around it. And so, again, I mean, this is, I really like Holly Hayes. How do you like her so far?
Oh, are you kidding? Fantastic.
Isn't she great?
Yeah.
I like you guys too.
I'm so excited about this. She's moving to the Nashville area.
Yeah,
I'm going to introduce her to friends. I'm going to take her to meetings.
Totally.
Oh, I'm so excited. You'll be my first friend in recovery there.
Yay. I'm it.
I think it's just so great for all types that you have a place to practice your authentic or essential self. Mm-hmm. Like thinking of recovery as a place to practice revealing your essential self with others so that you know how to do it when you find yourself in stress.
Well, and you know, so much of that 12-step work is really about stripping away everything that isn't the essential self. Mm-hmm. I mean, what I love about the 12 steps is that there's this, I think they're the perfect model for discipleship, first of all. Like, I think they are perfection in discipleship in Christ. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, you're looking at all those things that got in the way of the essential self. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at all those character defects. You're looking at all those harms you did to other people and harms that were done to you. And you're looking at those things and saying, okay, I want to let these things go. God, take these things, because I want to find out who I actually am. I actually want to know who I am without all of these masks, character defects, sins, whatever you want to call them, right? All these things that, all these defense mechanisms and coping strategies. Who am I with all of them gone? Who am I without all of this? So it's a sweet place to actually learn to be that essential self, I think.
Love that.
Oh, man, for sure. And you're talking about steps 4 and 5. And this is something that everybody, you know, and obviously, you know, you're also talking about step 9 and
6 and 7 and 9. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's all in there. I've talked about all of them, I guess, really.
Right. But when you say, you know, took a fearless moral inventory of ourselves, mm-hmm. right, in step 4, and then sharing it with God and another human being, which is step 5, you know, owning the things that we've done. And I think that is such an essential step in the life. I wish everybody had the opportunity to do that.
I agree. I think they should be required for Christians to have to go through the 12 steps and just look at your life and at yourself.
I am totally with you. And but as you know, it's the process is so difficult. It's hard to want to do it unless it's a life or death proposition.
I think that's so true. I mean, I think that's, unless your sin is leading to death and you can feel it, why would you want to look at it?
Let's just go eat another ice cream sandwich and call it a day.
So you're married to a 9. And
I'm married to a 9.
It sounds real healthy.
The 90th 9.
The 90th 9 for the you-iest
you. The you-iest you. I was about to say the same thing.
But here's the thing I would tell a lot of 3s that are doing their work. If you're married to a 9, I'm married to a 9 too, so I'm speaking with a little bit of experience. But as I've counseled 3s before, sometimes they find 9s to be in partnership with, because the 9 will let the 3 do whatever it wants.
Right.
Yes.
If the 3 wants to work 60 hours a week, the 9 will let him.
Yes.
The 9 is avoiding conflict, doesn't want to call the 3 out on.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's really worthwhile for every type to ask him or herself the question, what might have been the hidden motivation behind my picking this person, and how can I not be taking advantage of them? You're Oof. Laughing, you're smiling.
I mean, yeah, this is a struggle still today in our marriage. I mean, he can be so passive about these things, right? And so I think because I've done a lot of work, I call him out and make him do the work, even when he's being like non-boundaried with me, you know?
And 9s don't like to do the work.
They don't
Honestly,
like to do the work.
They don't like to do the work until they have to.
Until they have to. But when you have a 9 and their sin's not killing them, right? How are you ever going to get that person to do the work? I think what I do a lot in our marriage is model the work, where I'm like, hey, I'm going to do the work right now. You know, and hey, I'm going back to counseling. Want to come? And you know, and I think, but I think like I have to challenge him and I have to call him up, but he also goes to 3 in security. Right. And so, so the more, what I've found is like, I've tried 2 different tactics. I've tried nagging him and making him feel enough pain about his stuff that he'll do the work.
Right.
And then I've tried actually trying to create a place of security and a place of freedom and then invite him into conversation. And that's where I actually see him want to step forward and step up and start to do the work, because then he starts going, when he starts to feel more secure, he starts going into 3, right? Mm-hmm. Or is it that stress?
They go to the high side of 3 when they're doing great.
Yeah. So when he's secure, he starts to want to grow, really, you know? I mean, he like, and when he's stressed, that's where I see him go into anxiety and shutting down and that, like the unhealthy 6, right? That's where I see him start to go into like unhealthy 6, shut down, fearful, and even digging his heels in, like a stubbornness and I don't know if that's like an 8 wing or if that's him going to 6 in stress, but
no, it's that 6 in stress. It's that passive aggressive stubbornness.
Yes.
They also, you know, obviously they become more self-doubting and self-questioning.
Yeah. And then they fall more into the person they're with, right? So he's just like, okay, so I'll just disappear more and you can be shinier and I'll just be over here and pretend I'm not a human and not eat and not drink and not sleep and not, you know, and that's really hard to watch as a spouse, because it's like, okay. And so I've learned I have to nurture an environment of security for him. If I don't make him feel super safe, I'm never going to get what I want from him, which is like that healthy partner.
Mm. What we've learned, and I think part of this is my wife's an Al-Anon member. And for those of you who don't know what that is, Al-Anon is—
How do you get her to go? She's a 9. You get her to go to meetings?
Well, I mean, when things get bad enough, sure.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, life got bad enough.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and actually,
note to self, make it bad enough for him, right?
Well, no, but I'm just saying, like, when she heard that we have another member in our family who's in recovery as well. And so when she learned, okay, I can't change these people.
Right.
Like, I have to, in order for them to get well, I have to focus on my own journey of wellness and take care of me, and learn to let go of managing their recovery and sobriety and all that stuff. But Al-Anon completely revolutionized my wife's personality.
Wow.
As a 9, she woke up. It was like—
That's amazing.
Oh, it was— Anthony knows this. It's totally like, she's a different human being.
Mm-hmm. So does she not do everything you want anymore? Because I don't know if I want to send my husband if he's—
No, but she will say things to people.
There's a price to pay.
You know, I've heard Annie, you know, where before she would kind of subtly, in a very codependent way, kind of like want to, you know, manage things and all that stuff. Now she's like, hey, man, that's your journey.
And
she I feel like she shows up, like she's in the room now.
Yes.
I feel like I experience her presence in a whole different way now.
Right. Which we didn't years ago. I mean, it you know, there was this, as you know, 9s can sometimes, when they're not in a great space, they self-forget and they self-delete.
Yeah.
It's like they're not there. And so, by the way, they marry personalities like us.
Right. So they can self-delete.
And then merge with these big personalities. And with our preferences, our opinions, our viewpoints, our successes, our achievements, our work, all that stuff, they merge with it. But now my wife, she's her own person, and she found her own voice. That's what I would say. She found her own voice.
And she loves the meetings for herself too.
Oh, she loves her meetings, man.
Yeah.
She learns all kinds of stuff in there to like punish me with.
That's why I don't want to send mine. Because like, what if he comes back and he's like, I'm not going to let you do that stuff anymore, where you manipulate everything about our lives.
I've become of the belief that everybody should go to Al-Anon. It's like such a game changer for people. You know, it's terrific. All right.
Can I pivot us just a minute?
Please.
You might be going there. Holly, you mentioned earlier that you use the Enneagram in your work with the women that you're working with. And I would love to hear how it's been helpful for you.
Yeah, I think it's helpful for anyone managing a team, right? One of the first things I do when a new woman comes into Sanctuary Project is have them take the assessment. And then when there's a little bit of unsurety, I have them read The Road Back to You and really read all the different types and figure out, okay, you tested this, but is this what you relate to? And let's figure out who you are in this. But what's so helpful about it is I'm able to, because they're coming in really shut down and coming in with very little confidence most of the time. A lot of times they're coming straight out of jail. They have a record. They've failed at life in a lot of ways. You know, a lot of times there's just a deep insecurity there. And so I'm able to really use the Enneagram to build them up in a way and to acknowledge their experience and honor them for who they are, the themiest them, right? So, you know, we have our operations director is a 5-wing 6 and she is, she keeps us in line. Right. And so when there's a challenge that comes up, she's the first to be like, I told you so. This is what, and instead of getting defensive or instead of being frustrated with that, I'm able to honor her and be like, I'm so grateful that you have that ability to have that foresight, to see challenges that are going to come. And you're right. You were right. I kind of find, what is their key phrase that brings them life? And for a 5-wing 6, it's you were right. and then, you know, what is that? If it's a 2, you know, our creative director is a 2, and I know, like, you know, what brings a 2 to life is like, thank you so much for your help. I don't know how we would do this without you. And, you know, same thing, my executive assistant is a 2 too. I don't know how I would do this without you. I wouldn't be okay without you, you know, giving them that reassurance and speaking their language, because we're trying to rebuild them to the place that they feel confident in a work environment. You know, they're coming out of exploitation. And so a lot of times we're their first legal job, we're the first time they're in an office environment, maybe ever. And they're working around a bunch of women, which there's always issues with that. You know, I mean, there's always trauma associated with that. They'll come in saying things like, I'm not a girl's girl. I can't work around women. This is going to be really hard for me, because they've kind of been in a man's world. You know, being trafficked and being in that trafficking environment, being in jail, everyone's really shut down and hard. And they come out and they're like, I can't be around all these girly girls. And so we have to do whatever we can to make everyone feel safe. Mm-hmm. And so using the Enneagram, understanding the Enneagram, understanding how they're going to uniquely need to feel useful to our organization, and then giving them that reward and that payoff constantly of the, you were right, or we couldn't live without you, or, you know, we have a 9 and it's, thank you so much for bringing peace into this environment. And we have a 4 who I thought had mistyped as a 4 because of her trauma, but now I think she is a 4. But just honoring her for like the unique voice she brings and how grateful we are for her. You know, like, I don't, you know, you're so unique in this environment, and I really want your perspective. What do you think of this piece? Cause you're so creative. And if we can just honor them for who they are, it helps really rebuild that sense of self-worth and value.
Yeah. And I would say, and I don't know if you do this, but in communities like this, where you can say to a 2, you know, I couldn't do without you, but you know that I would love you even if you didn't meet my needs.
Okay, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Or if you're a 3 to say, wow, great job. You're killing it. You know, like we're really growing as a organization. But
you're,
you know,
enough is what they say to me all the time. You're enough.
Right. So what you can say to a 3 is, oh, and by the way, I would love you even if you failed.
I love that, Ian.
Or so if you're, good. You know, a 7. Thank you for bringing all the joy. But, you know, if you brought your pain, we would be there for you. And it would, we welcome that, too.
That's so good.
And we go through all the types.
That's so good.
You know, I think there's a 2-part message. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I want to know where everyone can learn about Sanctuary Project Jewelry. I know they can go to sanctuaryproject.com online. And now they can go to target.com to learn about.
I mean, does it get any better than that as a 3? I literally told them like the day we closed the deal, and they were like, all right, we'll send over contracts. I was like, I think my mom is going to be really proud of me. I think I won at life. Like, I think I just won. Did Boom. I just win?
Yeah, until the following day where you're like, okay, what do I have to win next?
No, I know. Now, we got to do another deal. Now I got to get Nordstrom too, probably, right?
Right.
Nothing wrong with it, right? I mean, this is the beauty of the Enneagram. I don't want you to lose the drive. I don't want you to lose the desire to win. I don't want you to lose the energy and the drive to be productive and efficient. I just want a 3 to do all those things while having the self-knowledge that, but you know, I can be loved completely apart from anything I do. I can just be loved for who I am.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're not all caught up in the lunacy of the type. Yeah. You're not trying to win love through achievement. Now it's just like, I get to achieve. Oh, and by the way, I don't have to achieve
I'm
in
loved.
Order to be loved.
Yeah.
I'm loved. You know?
Yeah.
Fantastic. All right. Anything else? Tell us about your socials. How do people learn about Sanctuary Project socials?
Yeah, find us on at @sanctuary_project, and then follow me. I'm launching a podcast because 3. So follow me at Holly Christine Hayes, and then you can find the podcast, which is called Finding Sanctuary, at hollychristinehayes.com.
Wonderful. We'll put that in the show notes as well.
Yeah.
And
I have 4 takeaways.
Oh,
the you-iest, the you-iest you.
Yes.
The themiest them.
The me-iest them.
Oh, it's the me-iest
Wasn't
them.
Wasn't it the me-iest them?
No, it's the themiest them. I want them to be the themiest them.
The themiest them.
I'm messing up the pronouns. Okay.
The 90-iest nine.
Yes.
And I put on the face of Christ as a mask.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Four takeaways.
Well, Holly Hayes, thank you so much for being on Typology. This was a rich conversation. This is one of the best conversations with an Enneagram 3 I've had.
I think we need to have a Welcome to Nashville little party. For
let's do it.
Yeah,
oh,
we'll do it.
Let's do it. I love that idea.
I mean, I'm not kidding. We'll do it.
Yeah.
I would love that. When I can't you wait land, to connect with you guys.
All right, when you land in town, you got my cell phone number, right? I think you do.
I think so. We'll get it. We'll connect.
I have it, so we'll do it. Get on a thread.
I'll give it to you after the show is over.
Yeah.
All right.
Anthony, thank you, guys.
Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you, Ian.
This was fun.
Yes, it was.
And Holly, thank you. And
thank you, Holly.
And all my Typology friends, remember these words. May you have love. May you have joy. May you have peace. May you have healing. May you have rest. Until next time.
Help your small business thrive and stay connected with the Comcast Business Complete Connectivity Solution. It's the largest, fastest, reliable network. Advanced gig speed Wi-Fi and cyber threat protection. Get started for just $40 a month for 12 months with no annual contract when you add mobile. Plus, ask how to get up to a $750 prepaid card. Comcast Business, powering possibilities.
Ends 2/21/2023. Restrictions apply. Requires EcoBill and AutoPay. New 100 megabits per second internet and Comcast Business Security Edge customers only. Equipment taxes and fees extra. After 12 months, regular rates apply. Gig internet required for gig Wi-Fi.